This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello, I'm Chris Stafford, and on the show this week, we're going to be hearing from Selena O'Hanlon, who recently won the Fairhill International CCI 3-star with John and Judy Rumble's Foxwood High. Selena will be here to tell us what it means to her to be the first Canadian to have won that event, and she also has a training tip for us. But first, we're going to hear from the newly appointed Performance Director for Eventing for Team USA, Eric Devander. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Well, first of all, congratulations, U.S. Performance Director for Eventing. How does that feel?
Well, it's very exciting, and I must say, when I was walking up to headquarters here yesterday, because I'm here in Lexington right now for the first couple of days and getting a bit of an introduction, it was quite overwhelming, to be honest, and the sort of seriousness of the whole thing hit me. So, but I'm prepared, I'm ready for it, but yeah, it's a very exciting project.
Well, it certainly is a big task. Of course, we've got the World Equestrian Games just next year, and we're halfway through that Olympic cycle. But before we talk about what the job involves and what your philosophy is, Eric, let's introduce you a little bit more to our wider audience here at the USEA. For those who are not familiar with your background, let's start where it all began in Sweden.
Well, actually, it started before that because it's funny enough, I was actually born in America, so I lived here until I was 6 years old. So I am an American passport holder and American, so it doesn't feel like I'm coming home, but it feels like a definite attachment to America through that.
Well, that's interesting. We learn something about you all the time. It was in Sweden where your eventing career took off, and that really was the catalyst there, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, that's true. I was very fortunate when I was a young rider, and where I was training my horses, I had access to the person who was in charge of the program in Sweden, and I got invited into a lot of their camps a little bit on the side there, and I got to see all our, at the time, top riders and see them work, and it really caught me, and I fell in love with the sport, and I've always loved horses, but just with the sport, it just made a big difference. And so it started there, and then I got selected at a very, very early stage. I'd had my first horse, a proper horse, because I had a pony before that, my first horse. And after having it for 1 year, I got selected for the European Championships, which is quite a big deal for when you're a junior. And we hit success straight away. We got silver as a team, and that obviously gave me even more joy. I liked the competition side of it, and we'd had success. So that was really the starting point. And then I grew through the ranks and went to young riders and then into the senior team later on.
Yes, it really took off from there. But there came a point after your successes on the team and as an individual, Eric, when you decided to branch off and really focus on your coaching, which has clearly become a very successful second career, if you like. What was the turning point in your career that made you decide that the time was right to do that?
The Swedish team, we won the European gold medal in 93, and then I rode at the World Championships in 94, and had a good, reasonably good result there. I think it was in the top 15. And for me to finance what I was doing, I got into coaching, and I did my 10,000 hours by doing millions of clinics and did a lot of that, and actually really enjoyed that. And so to be part of a sport and doing something I still enjoy doing, like the coaching, that was really the starting point. I don't know how it happened, but I got a job, offered the job to work with the Japan Racing Association, which was an organization who supported Japanese riders to ride at Worlds and Olympic Games. So I worked for a while with them and took them to Sydney Olympics and the World Championships before that. And so I worked with them for 3 years, and that was it was a real opportunity to learn and going with the riders to major championships and experience it from the other side, not as a rider, but as a coach. And so that was a major part of my learning. And then after that, or combined with that, I got the offer to work with the Swedish team. So I did that for a few years and helped to structure the training program there, restructuring that. And I think it sort of pretty much runs the same-ish way now as we did in the early days when I worked with them. And I also was had the fortune to coach a couple of the Swedish top riders through the Swedish Olympic Committee, and it was Sarah and Linda Algotsson, who both have been very successful over the years. And so I've been in a position of learning, and I would made a lot of mistakes for sure, and but to be in that space and try to work out what it takes to develop a champion was it was a good stepping stone. And then a little bit later on, I moved to New Zealand with my family, and at that time I got the offer to coach the New Zealand team, and I started doing that and did that for 10 years. And once again, as a coach, you couldn't wish for a better place to be, because with several legends in the team, with Andrew Nicholson, Mark Todd, and Blythe Tate, etc., there's a lot of learning from that. And also what I learned from developing a new generation of riders and being involved very closely with a new group of riders and bringing them from national standard to being successful internationally. And so I've done my years and have been exposed to a lot over the years and been challenged with a lot. So it's been an incredible life for me, to be honest.
Well, it certainly has been highly successful, obviously, as a coach. I'm curious, though, when you look back, you know, to the early days of establishing your name in the sport, Eric, who your mentors were?
Well, I've always been curious, and I've also always studied a lot of riders and trainers. I've traveled everywhere to work with the best and see the best in action. And also, every time I go to international competitions, I spend a lot of time studying what other people are doing, other trainers, and studying other riders. And so I think a lot of it is self-driven. So I don't think I would say a real mentorship. However, through the New Zealand sporting system, they have a program is called the Coach Accelerator Program, and it's a three-year program for all the top coaches in New Zealand. So they select five or six every year to go on this coaching program. And I must say that was an incredible value. I learned a lot about coaching in general, about strategics and how to set up performance, and also be around other coaches from other sport was highly valuable. But during that time, I also had a mentor who has been a great support for me over the last sort of 6 years.
So who would have been the people that influenced you in the sport then along the way, mostly? Because you've worked with so many top names, and as you say, you've studied, you know, the past masters of the sport too. So who would you pick to be the biggest influence in your career so far?
Well, obviously, when I moved from Sweden to the UK and to become a professional rider, I spent 2.5 years with Mark Todd, and obviously he's been an influence on me as such. And but I think I wouldn't say it would be one. I would probably say that I'm trying to stay really observant, and I think I've learned from everyone I've been involved with. So I wouldn't probably credit one or two people. It's just a mix of being in the right place and being with fantastic people and very driven competitors.
Well, you certainly have done that. You've really surrounded yourself by the top people in the sport. And now, taking on this new role here in the US, Eric, what does this actually mean to you in terms of your career development? And given the countries that you've worked with in the past, what is different? Talk a little bit about what you see going into this.
Well, I probably feel more ready than ever to get into a situation like this. Like when I started off with the Swedish team, I was very inexperienced and I had to learn a lot as we were going along. And obviously, everyone makes mistakes on the way, and you learn from mistakes and you get better at it. I think when I jumped into the New Zealand team, that was a massive task as well, because working with a very top end of riders, very successful riders, was a big challenge, and finding the right space and how I could help and influence and create an environment where riders can thrive and develop. That was a big challenge, and I found it very difficult, and had to work very, very hard at it. But I think now I have gained quite a lot of experience, and I feel more comfortable as in this role now because of all the previous experiences. But however, I know it's a massive challenge, and I know the pressure's on because as all athletes and the country wants results, and that's what the job is all about.
It certainly is, of course. The pressure is on now, and you've taken up the role here. And, of course, with the World Equestrian Games being on home soil as well, that adds a little bit extra pressure to you as the coach to deliver medals on home turf. Give us an idea of what your philosophy is now going forward. Or are you in that sort of wait and see, getting to know people more and get into your role rather than, you know, put your finger on anything specifically at this point?
Basically, it's all about, this is my second day here in the U.S., and I'm just getting to understand a little bit more of the system through meeting people right now. My next step over the next few days will be to start traveling around and visiting the riders, and it's really for me to get an in-depth knowledge about where the riders are at and what their needs are and their strengths and weaknesses, and really looking for the trigger points, what is going to make a difference in the support that we or I can give them in the process now up until the World Games. We will most likely pull together some camps and get a little bit of a team structure around us. But for me, it's really knowing about how the system works and really knowing and understanding the riders and see how I can fit in and how I can be of best help for them to develop them or further develop them as athletes, and same thing with the horses.
Well, you mentioned there the camps. How do you see, because obviously the US is a big country, a lot of miles to cover, a lot of athletes scattered around the country. How do you see this physically working for you, and are camps going to be the answer, or are you going to be doing the legwork in traveling to them individually?
Well, it is, as you say, there's a fair bit of traveling, but I'm sort of hard on with the travel, because when I worked for the New Zealand team, we were working on two different hemispheres with one season running opposite to the other one. So we're constantly at it with that job. So the traveling is something that doesn't really bother me. But your question is good in how to have the best effect. And I think my fundamental philosophy is that what happens in the daily work is the most important. So it's all about making sure that each rider has a really well-planned and well-structured path, how they're going to get themselves best prepared for the World Games. So the individual programs are, for me, it's the highest priority. And then at the right moments and when it's possible, we'll pull the riders together. If it's in meetings without horses or if it is together with horses, we'll see how it all pans out. But it's about utilizing the time as effectively as possible. I'm not that keen on traveling horses around for too many miles back and forth to places, so it has to be of a real good reason when we bring all the horses and riders together at the same time.
And will you be working with other coaches in terms of the individual discipline coaches, dressage and show jumping? How will this look now? What is your strategic plan really for the team?
Well, I want to make sure that all riders on the squad that they do have their own dressage trainer and jumping trainer, and I would like to see in that unit that I can work closely with them. And in some cases, I will possibly be working on the coaching side of it. Some cases, I'll be observing and watching the coaches, their trainers work with their athletes. So I think that part is really important, that there's a strong link between the team and the individuals' programs and the people they're working with. The other question around like how utilizing specialist trainers for show jumping and dressage in our program, that is something I need to figure out with the riders, what their needs are, and if and who will be suitable people in that space. But I think having the World Games on home soil gives us a little bit of an advantage that we possibly could use the riders' individual trainers. However, I'll be able to answer this a little bit better in 2 weeks' time when I've actually met the riders and spoken to them. So I haven't got a definite plan until I've actually really heard them out and see what their needs are.
Absolutely. Well, of course, it is a big task going into a World Equestrian Games on home turf, as we said earlier. What are you most looking forward to of this challenge then? I mean, culturally, that is different to what you've done in the past.
Well, it is a little bit like some people have asked me if I'm going to sort of just apply what I did with the New Zealand team to the American team. And I think that will be not a wise thing to do. I think we have to take have a respect for the culture, the previous experiences that these riders have, and the history of the sport here, and develop a program that is suitable for the athletes that we're working with right now. And I would like to make a difference. That's really the job as such, to make a difference and get the American riders and team on the podium. That's it's fundamentally around that. I'm looking forward to working with this. I've been traveling around. I've worked with several of the riders already as in private, and seen the horses. And I believe that there are some very talented riders and very talented horses there in the squad. And I'll be really looking forward to seeing what it is that it's going to make them tick. What is the trigger points? What is this that's going to make the difference? Really getting into the individual rider's situation and understanding how they operate and breaking down the detail and see where the percentages are, where we can make the improvements.
Well, we certainly wish you all the very best of luck, Eric, with your new role here as the US Eventing Performance Director. Big task ahead. We hope there are medals involved, of course, as everyone involved in the sport does. And we wish you the best of luck with all of your plans with the team. And thank you for taking the time to come on the program.
Thank you very much.
Well, joining me now is Selina O'Hanlon, fresh from that win at Fairhill. Welcome to the program, Selina, and congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm really pleased to be here as well.
And what a win that was. You made history, broke some records in the process, getting a Canadian on the winner's roster there at Fairhill, and a lovely win for your owners too.
Yeah, it was so special to have them there. I can't thank Dougie Hannum enough for jetting up on the golf cart, getting them out of the VIP and bringing them down in time to go into the winner's circle. It was a really special moment.
And what does this moment mean to you, actually winning Fairhill, winning the three-star with this horse? You've had a partnership with him for a while. What does that all amount to in terms of your career, Selina?
Being able to build and shine at the right time. It's been building and coming up in the last couple of shows. I've really started to believe that we're there to not only place, but, you know, instead of working on top 10, I now feel like we're working on top 5. And it takes a village. So many people have been added to the program. You know, I was already training with the Millers earlier, but now I've got Crystal Boylan helping me on the flat. And the team basically getting and peaking at the right time is what's key.
Yeah, and I'd read somewhere that you had really been focusing on your show jumping. I mean, you picked up a bit of time here and there, but that proved not to matter at all at the end of the day. But in terms of your show jumping, that really is something you've focused on with this horse now. So are you doing just show jumping competitions with him now? I'm assuming he's having a rest, but in terms of next season, would that be part of the plan of honing those skills in preparation for the big events?
Yeah, I think, you know, the work I've done with Jonathan Miller has really helped. At the beginning of the season, this type of horse show jumps really well because he hasn't galloped a lot. He's been doing a lot of collected work and, you know, slow twitch muscle work. So he has a bit more power up and seems to clear the verticals a little better. And then as you proceed through the season, he gets fitter, he's been galloping more, the jump maybe gets a little tiny bit flatter and those verticals are hard to leave up. So I was pretty bound and determined, regardless of the time, to not knock any of the jumps down at Fairhill. And I'm really pleased and was, you know, trying to stay positive that that's one of his best completions at the FEI. So I'm really pleased, and I'll just have to learn to go fast and jump it clear.
Personal bests, I gather, all round for him. So presumably yep. He's out in a field having some grass right now. And he came out of that well, did he, Selina, altogether, and traveled
Super.
Home okay?
Yep, he came out of it really well. He looks great. We didn't shave him until after dressage to keep him a little more sane and then to lighten him up for the cross country and help make sure he finished feeling fine, and he did. The show jumping, he's not doing anything right now, but when I go down, he might go down early, go to Wellington, have Jonathan Miller's help and Crystal Lott Boylan's help, and really keep working at getting better scores at both ends.
Fabulous. And have you looked ahead to the spring, what you might do with him next year?
I haven't had a chance to sit down and talk with his owners yet, but I know that his owners are keen for him to do Rolex next year, and they're hoping that maybe he'll get on the WEG team. And then the year after, they were talking about badminton, but now that he's won the very kindly sponsored prize of the flight from Tim Duda and Corp, perhaps maybe he'll be going to Europe sooner than that. You never know. We'll just have to wait and see what his owners think.
Well, a fabulous time in his career and your partnership, Selena. That must be very, very exciting for you to have got to this point now and things going as well as they have. The future looks bright.
Yeah, really exciting, and the owners are very, very pleased and excited, and I just think it's great that he finished up this season with personal bests, and it makes the spring season seem even more exciting and our goals even more attainable. So.
For sure. Well, that leads us very nicely into our tip with you. You're going to help us out here with some advice on how to keep your horse happy, not overtrain. And this is something I think will interest all of our listeners, because no matter what level your horse is at and what stage of training, it's important to keep them happy and not do too much at any one time, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think in the end, when you want that little bit extra from them, they have to really like you and enjoy the work and the process and give you that little bit extra you need at the end of a cross-country day or, you know, a show jumping day. I think we'd like routine in the barn. The horses really relax when they know what's coming and when they're going to be fed and what order they're going to be fed and turned out in. But I think variation in your riding program is really helpful. Yes, I stick to a four-day fitness routine and gallop, you know, twice a week and all the rest of it. But I try to make sure that they're walked, you know, for a really long time. After talking to William Sotspit and Ingrid and Klimke, they've both said how much they walk their horses or hack them or whatever before they actually go to work. So we've tried to really improve that in our barn and make sure the horses are walked for long enough before they're worked. But to make sure they do something fun and different, we have Sunday Fun Day jumping, where riders of all levels jump in their, you know, rider groups, green baby horses, and moving up the levels. And that's really fun because the riders enjoy it, so the horses enjoy it. And then making sure they can hack in between their trot sets and not just be in the ring every day and grinding away, because I think then they learn to resent and not enjoy the process.
Most certainly. And how about turnout? What's your usual routine for turnout for everything?
In the summertime, we can't turn out until it's dark because of the mosquitoes. We don't have shelters. But we do wait until it's dark and we turn them out. A lot of them go out overnight. Woody doesn't go out overnight because he would get a little bit chubby. So he goes out all morning, or, you know, if he's right now, he's on holiday, so he'll probably go out most of the day. They have water out there in the winter. Obviously, they don't go out at night, and they can't go out all day because of getting water out to them and that sort of thing. So, but making sure they have as much turnout as possible. If, you know, they need doll boots or whatever, that's great. But it's their only chance to be a horse, so we really believe in turnout and just small, careful groups. You know, no horses with back shoes with other horses, and Woody happens to go out alone because he prefers it. But they're next to other horses, and that keeps them happy too.
Now, how about a rest after, like, for example, Fair Hill now, after a three-day? Do you turn out, you know, and completely rough them off, as we call it in England? You know, you'll hear from William Sotspit and other British riders how they completely let the horse down. They don't do anything at all for a few weeks. Does that fit in with your thinking, or how much do you let your horse down?
Yeah, I think it's great for people who have that opportunity. I know that Davidson, who I've trained with since I was seven, has that opportunity. He's got beautiful pasture with shelters, and, you know, is able to take, you know, their shoes off or let them go and turn out and everything. And I think a little bit in England too, just because although it's wet and soggy and chilly most of the time, it is a very temperate climate, whereas here we have extremes. Sometimes the heat or the bugs will get to a horse that's been kept, you know, in and on a routine and everything. So it might, in the end, cause you problems. You don't want them to run or fence walk or injure or something. So I think it's different for every horse. And then I've had a lot of older horses, you know, Columbo and Bellamy Rock. If you let them go for an entire month, they would get a little bit sway backed or lose their top line too much, and it would be hard for you to bring them back. So definitely Woody will get the rest of the month off, and he will not be annoyed or poked or prodded. But he will probably start hacking after that for another 2 weeks, just because, again, I would like to get him somewhat in the way of work before I send him down to Wellington if he's going down early, because that way Kristalat will have something to work with. So, but yeah, I believe in mental breaks and holidays, and for the older horses, perhaps you have to bring them back and just start hacking them, you know, on the buckle, walking, or if you have a hot walk or something like that, I think it's more fun for them to hack, because you want to keep that top line and make sure that they don't break down.
Yes, you make a good point there, Selena, about the mental break as well as important as the physical break for any horse at any level. So this is good advice, a good tip there, Selena, how to keep your horse happy. Well, again, thank you very much for that. And congratulations on winning Fair Hill. And enjoy the celebrations. Presumably they lasted all the way home and well after you got home.
Yeah, I actually went home and then drove straight out to Pearson Airport and flew to Argentina for 2 days to visit Jose Artelli and the Yas forces and stuff. It was incredible. So that was basically my celebration. It was a whirlwind, but it was a real treat.
Fabulous. All right. Well, thanks again for taking the time to do this. Enjoy the rest of the of the year and, of course, your preparations for the spring and the summer and the late summer next year. Hope it all goes well.
Cheers. Thank you so much.
And that's our program for this week. Don't forget you can catch up on all the episodes of this podcast by downloading it from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app such as Podbean or Stitcher. And for more regular updates, please visit us on the website at useventing.com. While you're there, you might like to take the opportunity to register for this year's annual meeting and convention, which takes place in California. You'll find a link on the right side of the homepage. And you can also keep up with all the latest news on our social media channels at Facebook and Twitter. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.